So this evening I'm going to talk about the idea of having no attachment to outcome. One of these ancient spiritual ideas, no attachment to outcome. And it's an idea valorized, among other things, in the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita, of course, is a sacred Hindu text. It was the Gandhi based his life on this text. I'm just going to read a short passage from the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, always perform your duty efficiently without attachment to the results, because by doing work without attachment, one attains the supreme. King Janaka and others attain perfection by karma yoga alone. You should perform your duty with a view to guide people and for the universal welfare of society, because whatever noble persons do, others follow. Whatever standard they set up, the world follows. O Arjuna, there is nothing in the three worlds that should be done by me, nor is there anything unobtained that I should obtain, yet I engage in action. Because if I do not engage in action relentlessly, O Arjuna, people would follow my path in every way. These worlds would perish if I do not work, and I shall be the cause of confusion and destruction of all these people. And so this kind of cosmic vision that Krishna, who is Vishnu, has to keep on performing this ceaseless energy, and that we should imitate that, acting without attachment to outcome. And so it's a noble ideal, but of course, how can I say? If you just say to somebody, don't be attached to outcome, it's a hard thing just to manufacture at the moment, you know, no attachment to outcome. And so there's lots of layers to it in many ways. I mean, of course, an outcome is an expectation. And an expectation is when thought takes us on a journey away from the present moment. And so we're projecting into the future, thinking the future will be such and such, and we have a story about the future. And of course, whenever we leave the present moment, we're leaving our vitality. We're leaving our body. Our head can do expectations. Our head can construct all kinds of elaborate stories about what the future is going to be. The body is in the present. And it's fascinating if we're honest with ourselves, really, our expectations are usually not that reliable. I know that I've seen the pattern many times in my own life. You know, I think, boy, this is going to be great. This is going to be the best thing ever. And then it comes and it's like, oh, that's all there is. You know, or, you know, I think this is going to be horrible. It's going to be, you know, going to destroy me in some ways. And then it comes and it's like, oh, gee, that wasn't so bad. And in fact, sometimes even those things that I was dreading, I feel later, wow, I really learned from going through that. It was actually good that I went through that, you know? And of course, there's times that I, you know, you really want something and then you don't get it and you realize afterwards, actually, it might have been a good thing that I didn't get that, you know, this sort of thing. And so, you know, our very dramatic kind of, you know, expectations that this is going to be the best or this is going to be the worst often have very little grounding in reality. It's funny, when I actually think of some of the best things and worst things that ever happened to me, they blindsided me. I didn't see them coming at all, and suddenly I was in the middle of them, you know? And so, you know, all our fretting and hoping for the future has very little bearing. And of course, the future is largely unknown. There's a lot we don't know about the future. It's actually astonishing what we don't know even about tomorrow, you know? And Jung talked about when we're looking into the unknown, we project our own unconscious. And so it actually is very instructive if you look at the pattern of your life and you see the same story over and over again. You're expecting, you know, this expectation, you're expecting something to happen. Then the next time, you're expecting a similar thing to happen. And then the next time, something similar. You know, that's a story that your unconscious is telling, that a story that part of you is hanging on to, you know? And it it's not necessarily, the optical illusion is that as if it's telling us something about what's coming up on the outside world, it's actually telling us very much about what we're holding on to inside. It's funny, how can I say, our vitality, our emotion, our vitality is in the present moment, but we can project our emotionality outward. We can project it, project emotionality into the past or into the future. We can project vital energy into the past, into the future. And it's almost as if, you know, those times that I am hoping, desperately hoping for some magical thing in the future, it's as if I've taken my vitality and, as it were, projected it into the future. And so I'm sitting here sort of empty, without vitality, hoping to get that glowing future thing where I projected my vitality, not realizing that the glow and the magic of it is, in fact, my own vitality. There's a way that, how shall I say this? There's almost a kind of magical infantile thinking that part of us does. That if I, you know, if I think about the future and rehearse that expectation over and over again, that somehow I'll cause it to happen. Or if I worry about the bad thing, and if I worry about it efficiently enough, I'll prevent it from happening, this sort of thing. You know, and it's fascinating to look at what's the real beliefs there, and can we get in touch with the places that are holding on to beliefs like that, and can we actually sit simply with the unknown? A lot of times what is driving expectations and attachment to outcome is a sense of scarcity. A sense of wanting to control, a lot of very deep, you know, first and second chakra fears, needing to control reality, a discomfort with the, you might say, the watery, flowing, uncontrollable nature of the future. And how can I say this? The strategic mind is completely manipulated by first and second chakra level fears. The strategic mind thinks it's independent, it thinks it's running the show. It is a complete pawn of the primal core fears. And so those primal core fears come up and it spins the head out, and then the head goes into all sorts of strategizing or attaching to things or dreading things, you know, this kind of thing. And of course, what those places really need is to be met. You know, they're like children who are, you know, insistently demanding attention. And like any young child who's insistently demanding attention, they actually need compassionate adult attention, you know. And it's much in the same way, the broken infantile places with us need compassionate attention so that they can relax, so that they can feel fully, so they can heal. And so if I'm in a place of, in my head, not connected to my vitality, projecting my vitality outward, imagining the future as that radiant magical thing where I projected my vitality, then it's very hard to disattach from outcome. But if I'm in a place of being in touch with my body, anchored in my body, anchored in the experience of my own vitality, and aware of and comfortable with the complete unpredictability and uncontrollability of the future, from that place, it's very easy to disattach from outcome. And so that's a place that, one of the ways that I like to describe that place is a heart ready for anything. And so I'm going to share this piece. This is from a blog of Tara Brach. I just dropped it in the chat. And so you can just listen or you can read along, whatever you like. I'm going to start around the middle of the page. There's a very short one-sentence paragraph. You might ask yourself, can I imagine what it would be like in this moment to have a heart that is ready for anything? If our hearts are ready for anything, we can open to our inevitable losses and to the depths of our sorrow. We can grieve our lost loves, our lost youth, our lost health, or our lost capacities. This is part of our humanness, part of the expression of our love for life. As we bring a courageous presence to the truth of loss, we stay available to the immeasurable ways that love springs forth in our lives. If our hearts are ready for anything, we will spontaneously reach out when others are hurting. Living in an ethical way can attune us to the pain and needs of others. But when our hearts are open and awake, we care instinctively. This caring is unconditional. It extends outward and inward whenever there is fear and suffering. If our hearts are ready for anything, we are free to be ourselves. There's room for the wildness of our animal selves, for passion and play. There's room for our human selves, for intimacy and understanding, creativity and productivity. There's room for spirit, for the light of awareness to suffuse our moments. The Tibetans describe this confidence to be who we are as the lion's roar. If our hearts are ready for anything, we are touched by the beauty and poetry and mystery that fill our world. And so that is a noble ideal, the ideal of the lion's roar, you know, that tremendously affirmative yes to life. And one of the places that my mind goes when I think of that, the lion's roar, and in particular when I think of what it really looks like for someone to be completely unattached to outcome, I think of an amazing speech given by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. This was a speech sometimes known as the Promised Land speech. He gave it on April 3rd, 1968. He gave it on that evening. And the next day, he was assassinated. And he had been experiencing death threats for years, and they had been becoming more and more frequent, and he had been warned, you know, don't go to Memphis, but he went to Memphis anyway. And so on the quote sheet, I just dropped the quote sheet in chat. I have the quote from the Bhagavad Gita, and then this incredible passage from the Promised Land speech, the end of the speech. Well, I don't know what will happen now because we've got some difficult days ahead, but it doesn't matter with me now because I've been to the mountaintop and I don't mind. Like anyone, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place, but I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go to the mountaintop, and I've looked over and I have seen the Promised Land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know that we as a people will get to the Promised Land. And I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. In my mind, that is the lion's roar. So some of the other quotes here, of course, from the great Zen master Yoda. Attachment leads to jealousy. The shadow of greed is that train yourself to let go of everything you fear to lose. Alexander Pope says, blessed is he who expects nothing, for he shall never be disappointed. Jackson Kidard says, anything you can't control is teaching you how to let go. Jean Klein says, what any desire really aims at is a state of non-desire. This non-desire is a state in which we demand absolutely nothing. This is a state of extreme abundance of fullness. This fullness is revealed as peace and bliss. You now know that you're really seeking nothing else but fullness and absolute peace. Alan Watts tells us, we are living in a culture entirely hypnotized by the illusion of time, in which the so-called present moment is felt as nothing but an infinitesimal hairline between a causative past and an absorbingly important future. We have no present. Our consciousness is almost completely preoccupied with memory and expectation. We do not reveal that there never was, is, nor will be any other experience than present experience. We are therefore out of touch with reality. Ajahn Chah says, if you hold on to any expectation, you miss the wisdom. It is impermanent. Be the one who knows, the witness to it all. This is how trust grows. That's a deep one. That's powerful. Ram Dass says, a feeling of aversion or attachment to something is your clue that there's work to be done. The Dalai Lama says, attachment constrains our vision so that we're not able to see things from a wider perspective. Bruce Lee says quite simply, I'm not in this world to live up to your expectations, and you're not in this world to live up to mine. Sarabhan Brecknath says, today, expect something good to happen no matter what occurred yesterday. Realize the past no longer holds you captive. It can only hurt you if you hold on to it. Let the past go. A simply abundant world waits. Eckhart Tolle says, how do you let go of attachment to things? Don't even try, it's impossible. Attachment to things drops away by itself when you no longer seek to find yourself in them. Wow. Tom Althaus says, to win or lose depends on our set parameters. Expand the bounds of what is possible, and you may come out the true winner outside the confines of its defining. Matteo Sol says, as an empath, it's vital that you learn how to hold space for your emotions, even the most painful ones. By anchoring yourself in the breath, you can learn how to witness the emotional energy of others without attaching yourself to these sensations. Christopher Dine says, it is impossible to control outcome or result, although most of us have been programmed from a very young age to believe otherwise. The idea that we can perform actual magic causes tremendous dysfunction, unnecessary suffering, and prevents the development of emotional resilience. Steve Lisak says, we view our existence as a radio that needs fine-tuning. We are constantly flipping through the mind-generated frequencies in an attempt to find fulfillment and harmony. He also said, practice experiencing everything in a state of non-expectancy and non-attachment. The beauty of living will suddenly become clear. Valerie Sederwhite said, know that everything is in perfect order, whether you understand it or not. Mokokama Mokonohama, I'm not sure how to say his name, says, sometimes we are lucky to lose something or someone. Jonathan Lockwood Yui says, a wonderful gift may not be wrapped as you expect.